The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined in a studio by Tomás Keyes, who has written a very interesting piece in the Bar Review about the use of AI in the law. And I'm intrigued as to whether it's going to be a help or a hindrance. Tomás, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Now, it's a very interesting piece because often we will use search engines to get information quickly. With AI, we think it might even be better that it will parse and analyze the information that is available on the internet and we can use it with confidence. That is not so.
Well, I don't know right now if we can use it with confidence. It's a new technology. It's a very powerful technology. But with any new technology, we need to understand it and we need to be careful in the way that we use it. My article talks about the use or misuse of AI and when things go wrong.
And you have cited some cases where various parties brought forward citations of legal precedent and so on, turned out to be fibs.
Yes, but it appears that they might not have known that it's fibs. So what has happened in the courts in this jurisdiction and in other jurisdictions, especially in the United States and in England as well, is that we have the phenomenon of what is known as AI hallucinations coming into the legal process.
Now, how do you define an AI hallucination? I have a quote here, so I'll read it if you don't have the article in front of you. AI hallucinations refer to instances where artificial intelligence systems, particularly those using large language models, LLMs, generate responses that contain false or misleading information presented as fact.
Yes, and in fact, to get that definition, I asked an AI model, but before publishing it, I checked that it was in fact correct.
How do you check then? You know, when you're depending on, if you like, these online sources, so you decide to check by Google.
No,
is Google lying, or is Google more reliable?
Well, I think the knowledge of the law is more reliable, and the professional lawyer should be able to access proper legal databases. But Pat, I think for your listeners, when they're hearing words like AI hallucinations and LLMs, I think it might be easier if I explain it as one of my colleagues did to me recently. An AI hallucination is like a student who hasn't prepared properly for the exam. They want to impress. They want to give the right answer. It sounds plausible, but it's not. It's
wrong. So the AI is behaving like a toady, a kind of a lickspittle towards authority, if you like, who is the inquirer. They want to please the inquirer.
They want to please the inquirer. So the LLM, the large language model, it is designed in such a way to produce an answer. If it doesn't know the answer, it doesn't say, computer says no, it will give an answer that sounds plausible because it wants to please.
Now, often when I would use one of these AI facilities, it might tell me that there isn't enough information, for example, to give me an answer. And that tends to be when you're asking something very specific about something very local, which might not be harvested in the large language model learning. But for things like case law, you'd imagine they are so detailed and so local that AI would put the hands up and say, no, sorry, can't help.
Well, in fact, one of the first cases where this happened was a case called MATA, which was a case in the United States. It was a personal injury action where somebody, I think the plaintiff's arm was hit by a trolley or something like that, and they sued the airline. And there was an application before the case went to trial to strike out the case because of delay. And the researchers, the lawyers, used ChatGPT to produce the written submissions. And clearly the other side couldn't find any of the citations. They wrote to the judge saying, we can't find them. So the judge got his own researchers to find them, and they couldn't find the cases either. And then ultimately there was a hearing. They asked the lawyers what happened. And there was this exchange between the lawyer and the judge where the lawyer said, I asked ChatGPT, was this case a real case? And it said, oh, of course it was. And then it gave the citation. And about a year later after this case, I asked ChatGPT the same question because I was preparing for a talk. And ChatGPT had learned to cover up its lies, where in fact it said, oh no, you should check a legal database for that.
Oh, so it did say, hands up, I can't help you there. But it had lied before.
It had hallucinated before. It's a machine. It doesn't know it's lying. It's producing what it feels is the correct answer.
But you wonder, how was that correction harvested, if you like, by the large language model? I mean, did it learn from what was said in court, or how did it learn?
Well, I don't know the exact engineering, but what you can imagine is there are so many newspaper reports about the Mata case and about the fact that the citation was incorrect that you can only imagine that
it harvested all of that.
And it said, now, right, it's not correct and you should now check your citation.
Had the judge in the original case accepted the ChatGPT citations, did the judge at that time say, yeah, this is fine, or did the judge question it?
No, the judge knew that it was brought to the attention of the judge by the other side that they couldn't find these citations. So the judge got his own researcher to then call up the various court, the federal appeal courts.
Actually make the old-fashioned inquiries by telephone.
Yes.
Ring them up and say, by the way, that case of XYZ, do you have it on your books? Yes or no? And what was the result?
And the result was, we don't. And then there was a hearing for the lawyers to explain themselves. It's called a show cause hearing. And ultimately, the lawyers got fined. Now, the fine wasn't too much.
It was derisory.
I think it was about $5,000. And the judge had hoped that this might be a watershed moment. But current research shows that there are over 600 reported judgments or decisions worldwide. And these are the ones that the judges are aware of, where hallucinated false citations have been used or suspected of being used.
Now, what kind of resources do professional lawyers have, be they barristers or solicitors, in terms of checking up and stuff? I mean, does the Law Society, does the Bar Council have its own resources, if you like?
Yes, so the Law Society, it has its own library that's available to all solicitors, and most solicitors' firms will have access to the various legal databases and textbooks. A solicitor can always refer a question or a case or instruct a barrister. And at the law library, we have access to legal databases. It's part of the subscription that we pay that we have access to verified legal databases.
Verified, but they're still online. I mean, you can't be, there are obviously eminent tomes on the shelves that you can access, but most of inquiries are probably done online.
Yes, no, we have access to the reported judgments that are there, but the databases aren't being fed in by external sources. It's like here, anything that you have online, I can't feed into the Newstalk, a database that you
unless
have.
We're hacked.
Well, yes, it is unlikely that will happen. But again, any lawyer should know that putting false information before the court is a very bad idea.
Now, you know, criminals will do all sorts of things, so trying to hack into a database might be not as dramatic as, for example, the burning down of the forensic science lab in UCD some years ago to get a particular criminal to destroy the evidence, basically, that would have convicted that criminal. So criminals will go to all sorts of lengths to maybe interfere.
Yes, now, criminal law is not my area of expertise, and obviously...
But the same principles would apply to any database, be it criminal or civil.
Yes, they would, but we have good IT support at the bar that will protect against such hacks. Again, that isn't my area of expertise, so I don't want to stray into that.
Now, your article is called Artificial Intelligence, What Happens When AI Goes Rogue? So what prep is being done by both the Law Society and the Bar Council for this new world?
Well,
And judges, by the way.
Yes.
How judges are going to be armed.
So that article, it was published, I think, at the beginning of October, and it's actually out of date because everything is developing so quickly in the AI world, in the legal industry. So the Law Society have produced various bits of guidance to its members, and that has been published, I think, in the last year alone. There have been three separate publications from the Law Society for guidance for members. The Bar of Ireland, our professional practices committee, set up or produced guidance to members, a very detailed one, which was developed by Ronan Lupton and some of his colleagues. And
Are there any sanctions laid down, or does it depend on the judge? It goes before the court, the judge hears all of this stuff and then maybe uses, if it's someone who's AI savvy as a clerk, to check everything up and then comes back and finds out that someone has been a bit bold, be it solicitor or barrister. Do they have sanctions laid down in law, or would it be the judge?
There are common law sanctions. So what you have is you have a situation, and I refer to it in my article, where a very junior barrister, I think she was only in her second year of the bar in England, she used false citations in a case. She actually won the case, or the case was conceded by the other side, but the false citations had been used. They had been used incorrectly. And then when asked about this, the judge, the High Court judge, was not happy with the answers, felt he had been misled. And then there was she was ordered to pay the costs of the other side personally. There was then a second hearing before the President of the High Court of England and Wales, the King's Bench Division. And that judge found that the behaviour of the barrister and the answers given amounted to contempt of court. So unfortunately for that barrister, she has now been referred to her regulator.
Okay. Now, was the decision reversed, or did the decision stand?
No. So what had happened is
the other side conceded.
The other side conceded it was a housing case and housing rights. The other side had conceded at that point, but the only question that was before the High Court judge in the initial hearing was who is entitled to the costs. And the barrister was ordered to pay the costs for that. So those are some of the consequences that can happen. You could have costs orders being made against you. Or in America, recently, where the lawyers who had used this were ordered to provide a copy of the judgment which criticised them to every lawyer in their firm, to every opponent that they were against, to all of their clients, and to every judge who they had falsely said had given a certain decision.
A lot of busy work there. That's a penalty in itself, isn't it?
It is, it is.
Tomás, thank you very much for joining us. That's Tomás Keyes BL, and a very interesting article to be found in their professional review, which is the Bar Review. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.